Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak livery, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. We're almost there.
Yeah.
Oh, we're almost there. Just a few more days, one more game.
Yeah,
we can take this season back behind the woodshed and put it out of its misery, and everyone can sort of retreat to a tumultuous offseason.
Yeah, it feels worse than a year ago. I mean, they've got the same amount of wins right now.
Yeah.
Could finish with a slight improvement, but yet there, nothing feels improved.
Yeah, it's one thing to slide back. It's another thing to stay back.
Right.
It's like, you know, because excuses were made as to why they slid back, and it's, is this a trend or is this just an outlier, right? Well, I think it becomes a trend this year, and that's really the problem.
Yeah, in the NFL, the way, well, unless you're in Cleveland or Chicago, I mean, you know, usually, you know, you don't want to stack seasons like this together.
Yeah.
And so two is a trend to me in the NFL because of how quickly things usually change over.
Yeah, in most places, exactly. So we're at a lot to get to today. We're going to try to pack it in, keep it tight when you guys are all out on your holidays. So I hope everybody's having a Merry Christmas, going to have a Happy New Year. We'll give you something while you're driving around getting stuff done. We're going to talk a little bit about if it matters that the Bengals showed a little fight this past weekend against Detroit. We're going to dive a little bit into Marvin's legacy.
Yep.
Of course, I think all expectations, it's really basically a done deal that the parting of ways will happen after Sunday's game in Baltimore, so it'll be his last game. We'll talk about his 15 years here. We're going to talk about who else could be in their last game in Baltimore. We're going to kind of run down a list of some of the guys there and get kind of a general feeling. We'll get more into that once the season ends. We always write that list of free agents who likely to be back and not, but we're going to kind of take our first dip into that water for you. Power rankings, I think I'm going to go Rocky movies today.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most famous ones happened on Christmas, so I feel like we're in the season.
Yeah.
'Tis the season for boxing.
Yeah.
Yesterday was Boxing Day.
That's true.
So, I mean, really.
It fits.
We
killed Carl Weathers once.
On this very podcast, Carl Weathers died.
So, you know, and I think it is appropriate.
And then he showed up at the Super Bowl, wouldn't talk to us.
Nope. I wonder why.
Because I killed him. So much for BPs.
Yeah. Still one of the highlights of this podcast.
Yeah, that Carl Weathers tweeted at us, hashtag BPs. Yeah. I don't really know what it means.
No.
But it means
like, hey, I'm still alive.
Yeah. I tweeted at you.
Right.
All right, so let's dive into some of this stuff. Bengals beat the Lions 26-17, proving us wrong.
Yeah.
I think we both had them losing by about 20.
Yeah.
Assuming they would continue to lay down as they had, but the team did summon a little bit of, hey, we're kind of sick of this crap.
Right.
And played with a little bit of inspiration.
Yeah, I think that was more testament to the veteran guys. Because who are we talking about here? You know what I mean? 25, 18 didn't really start off with a good day, but then all of a sudden he caught everything.
Yeah.
Late. 14 had a decent day, you know, decent. And then, you know, defensively, 43, George Ailoka, I saw a lot. Vinny Ray, again, put in a really bad situation with linebackers going down. You know, he got caught in one mismatch late, but, you know, you're talking about a lot of guys, and Giovanni Bernard, of course, who they don't care about draft positions or Gio. It was funny, Paul. A reporter asked Gio about, like, you guys not playing for anything. And Gio goes, no.
Yeah.
We're playing for the front of the jersey and the back of it. And it was interesting, his tone with that answer.
Yeah, he took offense to it.
Right.
Really. I mean, the idea that they're not playing for anything.
Right.
They're just out there screwing around, you know. And I do think after 2 weeks, and really you look at it, the Steelers beat them twice.
Yeah.
Marvin beat them in Minnesota.
Yeah. It's fair. I think that's a great.
And they're sort of back to who they are again.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was playing with when they are into it. I mean, that's who they are. They're good enough to beat a bad Lions team that was, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll compete with Baltimore.
Yep.
On Sunday. I don't know that they'll win. Baltimore's a lot on the line.
Yeah, and I think the idea of, quote-unquote, Baltimore playing for something is going to be different than Detroit playing for something, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Baltimore's mentality is way different than the Lions.
Baltimore's been playing pretty well lately.
Yeah.
The Lions are sort of
trash,
a sputtering road team. But, I mean, I think Baltimore has a lot to them, more to them than Detroit does.
They have a real defense. The Bengals can't do what they did again on offense. Now, the yardage looked great against the Lions, but they can't roll out the kicker four times. You know, and
yeah,
they didn't
convert enough. But I mean, I think the question was, does it matter? I mean, does it in the big picture? Does it matter that they showed a little fight, or is it just sort of?
No, I think in the big picture was the two guys playing left guard, Alex Westerman. Why not?
It might as well be one thing.
Alex Redmond and Christian Westerman. You know, those guys being enthusiastic and run blocking. You know. William Jackson again. I guess we'll find out how serious that arm injury was. I don't think he returned. That was real late.
Yeah.
Again, it was more about those young guys. It was good to see Carl Lawson finally get a sack first time in like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
He's up to 8.5 now.
Yeah. So to me, that was kind of. I guess for me, that's what mattered. Was like, okay, some of these Andrew Billings didn't play, which I'm still surprised about. But you know, sure. I mean, whatever. You know, they didn't lose their last one at home in a stinker.
This was
boot off the field.
This was classic vintage mid-90s Bengals win. Like the one late in the season that makes you think, hey, maybe the next year, you know, but it's just where they're already out of it, but they show a little spunk at home and get a win. And it's sort of part of this building towards next year, thought of hope.
Yeah.
They cycled that through for 10 years around here, these late December wins. You can go back and look. There, it's just full of them. It was sort of a vintage false hope 90s Bengals type deal. So I tend to think that while nice and while good to see them not completely lay down the last 4 weeks of the season – in the big picture, you're right. I don't think it really means a ton.
No, especially if there's going to be a lot of turnover on the coaching staff.
Right. I mean, what momentum do you have if all of a sudden you have a whole new staff in here? Which we talked about and wrote about that in BX about the assistants. We talked about it a little bit last week. It's just, I mean, there is a chance we will have an entirely, like maybe not one, coach assistant back with the amount of changeover it's gonna be happening across the league. Now you've got people throwing out there that there's gonna be like 14 head coaching changes. I would say that it's at least being debated in 14 cities.
That's
but all 14 possible. Are not gonna pull the trigger.
Because it's supply and demand, and trust me, the supply is very thin.
Yeah.
You know, there's just at some point teams are gonna look around and be like, well, we really don't like this dude. Who are we going to get? Seriously. Yeah. Like, you know, there's a thought, you know, people keep pegging Jay Gruden and Hugh Jackson to this job, and that's fine. But let's just say Jimmy Haslam does what he said, and he's not firing Hugh Jackson. Let's just say Daniel Snyder says, man, I just extended Jay Gruden this offseason through 2020.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fire this dude. Well, there's two names. You know what I mean? Like, there's two names, I guess, if you will. But there would have been two other openings. I just think there's just too many. There's too few coaches. There's
right.
too few coordinators.
Prime candidates.
Too few. I mean, that's why Jeff Fisher's rolling around like, hey, guys, I'm still here.
I coach.
Marvin
will get a job if the type of turnover that happens, because
right.
someone's going to say, you know what, I think he'll be good if he's in a different environment and he's rebuilt before and all that stuff. You're right, because of the lack of candidates. It's sort of like, you know, we kept saying last year, look, this is one of the worst offensive line drafts.
Yeah.
Don't think you're going to suddenly restock even though you need it. And everyone's like, get an offensive kid. We need offensive line.
Right.
Go get. They're not there.
Right.
Right. And it's similar. These things come in cycles with coaches too, assistant coaches. I mean, maybe somebody out there that is, you know, Sean McVay wasn't a huge name last year.
No.
He was just a guy, some young kid. And now everybody wants Sean McVay.
Right.
They want the next Sean McVay. So maybe those guys are out there, but there don't appear to be as many to choose from at all that you normally see, where it's like, oh, yeah, this guy has been rising and he's ready now.
And to along your line of your BX with these assistants, Paul, yes, the head coach is the face of the organization, and that's the splash and whatever. So not only are there not enough head coaches for 9 to 14 jobs, my opinion. Who's coaching for them? Because that's the important thing. I mean, Sean McVay, and I'm sure Sean would be the first to tell anyone once they get to the playoffs, the biggest thing he did and the biggest thing the Rams did is Wade Phillips on defense. What, Wade's like 70, right?
Yeah.
Right? And then Matt LaFleur, who people might outside the league may not know him, but a very well-respected offensive mind, quarterback-centric, developmental coach. He has a good staff there, and you know, for the success of this Bengals team, and you know, the five head coach, well, I guess Leslie Frazier goes back, but like the four head coaches were here. That's part of why we're here talking about a new coach, and that's part of why the Bengals were good. Like, so if there's that many openings and people moving around, who's coaching where?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And good for these guys. That means some of them aren't going to get a bidding war and are going to get paid. And Lord knows they deserve it. But that's part of it.
Yeah, it is. I think you'll see more retreading this year.
Yeah.
Because I think people will look around and be like, well, Jack Del Rio or one of these guys that gets fired, maybe even surprise fired.
Right.
And end up in where you have maybe half the openings are filled by people that were fired elsewhere.
Right.
You know, I think that's very much in play. I mean, we just talked about it as maybe the two top candidates on the list.
Right.
Here are guys that need to get fired elsewhere.
Yeah.
So you tell me where the league is at with that. And maybe they are not doing a good enough. Maybe the league doesn't do a good enough job mining its own candidates from other and getting that out there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they need to. With the Fritz Pollard Alliance and
yeah, it's
that
part of
stuff.
The Rooney Rule and things. And I saw something going along about like way back in the day, you know, when Tomlin was hired in Pittsburgh, that like it was Russ Grimm way back when was deemed the man. He was going to get it. And then they interviewed Mike and he blew him away.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. You know, and that's fair. But honestly, I mean, even with a broader pool of candidates with that rule, it's still. I mean, you still are looking for dynamic leadership.
And you're getting thin resumes.
Thin resumes and who's on your staff. That's the thing. You know, and I don't know the mechanics of the McVay Rams. Everyone keeps pointing to that. I do know in Philadelphia a couple years ago when they fired Chip Kelly with a week left, there was a reason for that. It was to give what they thought was enough time to find things. I think that's why the Giants might end up well, the Giants still could bungle that thing because they're looking for a GM. But it's the staff. You know, Frank Reich, and yes, they got a quarterback, but Jim Schwartz and Frank Reich are proven good coordinators. Are they head coaches? I don't know. Schwartz already failed, and he's kind of a crazy person.
Yeah.
But does Frank Reich deserve to be interviewed here in Cincinnati? I mean, his offenses with Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz aren't exciting, but they're not terrible. He played. He's kind of younger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's all part of this, it's going to be a very interesting.
Everyone on Bengals Twitter, Facebook, 10-letter writers will be angry no matter what.
Well, right. I can't – like, honestly, I think if you were doing a poll, maybe we'll do this, of who would be most widely accepted, like
right,
not hated, it would be Hugh Jackson by the – by the fans. It's a name they know. I think the name they like. And that guy's 1-30. And because anybody else they hire is not going to be a – John Gruden is not coming here.
No. I was going to say, that would – John Gruden and Josh McDaniels would be the one where everyone, quote, unquote, I'm doing air quotes, like rallies around and says, oh, they won the hire. They got the best guy. Yeah. I think everyone else comes with a pocket of people who – I mean, because there will be some people who say – what the heck,
yeah,
with Hugh? You know,
but you know,
everybody
flawed. Wants Sean McVay. Sean McVay was not John Gruden. Was not Josh McDaniels.
No,
you know, and so we're taught you make these promotions and you hope they work out. A lot of them don't.
No,
a lot of them don't.
Look at Buffalo.
I mean, they're playing for something.
Well,
this week.
I mean, 10 head coaches in 17 years.
Well, right.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can churn these and just look, you can hit duds that just prove that they were better coordinators than head coaches, and you don't really know till you get them in there.
Right.
How many people here, I think for a while I was among them, said, I think Mike Zimmer is going to be a better coordinator than a head coach, and Jay Gruden a better head coach than coordinator. They seem to have skills, and it's been the opposite.
Right.
You can say it across. No one really knows until those guys get in that job how they're going to do and how they're going to handle it.
Right.
You really don't. I mean, you people in hindsight can, but you really don't. And so you're taking a chance.
Yep.
But it, you know, we all admit it's time for this organization to take a chance. But you got to understand, it is that.
Yeah,
there are zero sure things here. All right, let's talk about Blue Apron real quick.
Yeah,
because you're taking a chance. You think you're taking a chance with them, but they deliver every time.
Yeah.
Unlike these coaching hires.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Waiting for you when you order it. It's the Blue Apron is a leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. You're not just getting burgers, no. Short rib burgers, hoppy cheddar sauce on a pretzel bun, Paul.
Boom, pretzel bun.
Seared steaks and thyme pan sauce, mashed potatoes, green beans, crispy shallots, all in under 45 minutes. You don't even have to go to the grocery store. Number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. You can get the 2-meal plan like I do, serves 2 people, 8 recipes a week. You can do the family meal plan like Paul, serves up to 4. Including an Uncle Phil. And you can get 4 recipes a week in that one. Or you can get the wine plan, which we both participate in. 6 bottles of wine.
Bam.
From renowned winemakers delivered monthly. Got to do it.
Nothing better than when wine shows up at your door.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just there. So, Blue Apron is treating Bengals Beat podcast listeners to their first 3 meals, a $30 value with your first order if you visit blueapron.com/beat. So check out this week's menu, special to BBP listeners through the end of the year. Get that roasted chicken and maple butter with mashed sweet potato and collard greens. I know I've talked about that dish before,
Paul. Gotta do it.
But you gotta do it. It's that good.
It's the one.
So $30 off with free shipping, blueapron.com/beat. blueapron.com/beat. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Better way to cook. Let's dive in real quick. Something what I'm writing for game day this week, which is on it may be the most complicated question that we tackle in any game day section this year. And that's what's Marvin Lewis's legacy here. You know, when people look back at these 15 years, what are they going to say? Now, I think it will depend on who you talk to.
Yeah.
Across fans, and across how old coaches, they are. Across the league, absolutely. There's a whole generation of fans that only know Marvin Lewis
right.
as the Bengals head coach that don't know the 90s and that have been, you know,
pretty lucky
to see a lot of wins.
Yes.
To see more wins than losses, for sure,
yes.
and see a lot of quality seasons, you consider, and the most successful five-year stretch of wins in franchise history.
Yes.
You know, in their 50 years, no stretch has been better than 2011 to 2015. None. So there's that. But so to me, I think you've got to – I think there's like five things.
Right.
To me, you – and we can rank them basically. 0-7
yeah.
is out there. And I don't
– part of it.
It is hard to trump that.
Yep.
It really is, because this league is all about what you do in January, right?
Right.
All coaches ever talk about is preparing to be playing their best and ready to go and win a championship and play right. in January. In January, you're 0-7. You can't run. There's no running from that. There's no hiding from that. That number is massive. It's bigger than, what are we at, 124 now? 124
yep.
wins. So you have that. You also, on the flip side of that, have what this franchise was before Marvin got here.
Yeah.
Right? The fact that five straight playoff seasons was not good enough
right.
is Marvin's legacy.
Yeah.
That's how far the bar has risen.
Yeah.
From where it was when he got here. How what people just wanted to be on Monday Night Football once.
Right.
Much less make the playoffs.
Right.
They just wanted to be on Monday Night Football.
Right.
And then they were. And then they made the playoffs. And then they made it again. And then they made it five straight times. But by the end of that, it wasn't good enough because the bar was raised so much
yeah.
higher because everything was done better across this entire organization.
Right.
And that's Marvin Lewis.
Yeah.
Right? Those two things are hard to weigh against each other.
Right.
Because you need to produce championships if you have 15 years to do it.
Right.
But, you know, when you consider where it started and where it made it.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And they go hand in hand. You know, Marvin said that kind of in a weird way, got to that point at the end of his press conference on Sunday night, Paul, saying that the goal is to win a Super Bowl. My job is to win a championship. And we didn't do that.
Yep.
This year, meaning he wasn't looking back. He refuses
but
to look back.
This is the 15th straight
right.
year that he has to
so
say that.
You're right. I mean, because we look at things globally, and Marvin Lewis and the Bengals and his tenure are considered a success across this league. Believe it or not, outside of New England and maybe a little bit Pittsburgh, just with the way they talk, like Super Bowls are not the definition of success. In a real basis, you take these guys away from the podium. Everyone knows only one person wins a trophy. There's levels and what's good. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
so you know. But yeah, here in Cincinnati, Paul, you're right. If you're an older person, Doc's talked about this a lot. Doc remembers the 90s. Doc was raking leaves and wearing bags on his head with fans. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So he knows. Those fans know. I think as Marvin will exit, they will applaud the fact that they're here where five isn't good enough, seven playoff trips isn't good enough. Wow, look at the work it took. 20-year-olds. Nah. Like the legacy's 0-7. So I think there is
yeah.
a generation. I think there's definitely a generational divide. I think he'll go out with overall appreciation and a once the vitriol, the hashtag fire Marvin goes away.
Yeah.
Especially if they hire a new coach, everyone's excited they go 3-13.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, it is complicated on the field because 0-7. Even if it was 1-6, honestly, I think it's a little different. But 0-7 is a big one.
You need, yeah, exactly. You need a run. At the very least, you
yeah,
need,
you needed
have
the
one run.
Run.
I mean,
yeah.
you don't need to make the Super Bowl. And you got to have a run. You got to have. You got to. How much have we talked about this year? You got to create moments for fans. Yeah. You got to create moments that make them believe in you. That make them believe that you can win big games. That make them proud to be Bengals fans. And there weren't enough of those. There were a lot of wins.
Right.
There weren't enough big game wins.
The Steelers record can lump that in there. Part the of that was his legacy too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so you throw all. So that's like three.
Yeah.
Marvin Lewis Community Fund, and I know like eyes are glazing over here.
No, this
and,
is
like,
important.
People really don't. I know you don't want to hear it, and you're like, ugh, charity stuff, like whatever. You're in the bag, like you're like a house man. There was no charitable wing here.
No,
before Marvin got here, like
nope,
there wasn't.
The, the Brown family donates very privately and quietly.
Absolutely.
So there was no public facing. Community outreach.
Yeah, trying to connect this team with the community and help people in the community through those interactions. It has become arguably the best in the NFL as far as anybody's community fund. Every coach that has left here said they have basically structured their charitable aspect around exactly what Marvin does.
Right.
And it has a unbelievable the number of scholarships that they've given away, the massive success that Learning is Cool has become.
Right.
I know people say, well, this is about football, and I don't care how good of a guy anybody is.
Right.
You know, but except when
other guys are bad.
When other guys are bad guys. Yeah. But I mean, I think that's part of Marvin's story is that anybody would admit. He's a very good person. He legitimately cares about the community and helping people in the community.
Right.
It's not just about football. And that's inside of the building as well. Like, he legitimately cares about everybody that works in this building. And a lot of football coaches are not like that.
No.
Does that matter to the normal fan? Does that matter in the scheme of 0-7 and all of that? Probably not. But it does have, I do think, it may be the most lasting aspect of his legacy here, that when he's gone, like, those wins, like, some good times were had,
right,
whatever, but the actual lasting of all those scholarships, those kids that never could have gone to college,
right,
and that, what they become it because of these programs that didn't exist until he got here, I do think is maybe the most lasting part of what his legacy will be.
No, I agree 100%. As someone who's talked to some of those people and you know what that getting a scholarship to go to college means, you know, it affected me speaking to them because these are kids who weren't doing that otherwise.
Absolutely.
So you're right, Paul. And then let's not forget, and this is kind of part of this too, you know, again, this goes back to maybe generationally speaking, maybe people don't remember what the racial climate was in Cincinnati when Marvin was hired as an African-American head coach. And that, again, and he knew coming in what he was walking into in this city. And while it may not have been, again, very public and broadcast, people have said this, Marvin was very instrumental in bridging some real gaps and some real problems. Because why? Because he's the head coach of the football team. And for whatever, and as we all know, we talked about sports as society, that brings people together. Mm-hmm. And it sounds cliche because it's true, and that was something, you know, a big part of what Marvin did back then, you know, that was important. But yeah, you're right, Paul. I think the charitable aspect, that's a big deal for this next head coach coming in. If the Marvin Lewis Community Fund goes away, you know, people may knock this conversation we're having, but there's a reason why the Reds are perceived the way they are.
Yes.
They do things very publicly and put it out there, and people feel good about the Reds all year long.
Because of stuff that they do in the community. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's just, you know, that it you may not think it matters, but it actually does matter.
Particularly here where they've done such a bad job in the community.
Right.
As far as being out there and noticeable and creating a connection.
Right.
I mean, there's what have we talked about? One of the biggest aspects that's problematic right now with this franchise is their disconnect with their fan base.
Right.
Connecting with the fans.
Right.
Is a huge part of the job here because there is a disconnect.
Yeah.
You know, look, there was not a disconnect with the like 25 to 30,000 Bengals fans that came to that game on Sunday. They love the Bengals.
Yeah. And they were real glad they won.
Yeah, and they were real glad they won, and they were rooting hard and wearing their wigs and their Peter Work throwbacks and and all that stuff, and, like, man, they were into it. But there needs to be double that amount.
Yeah.
And that truly connect themselves with this franchise. That's, you know, that's why every, you know, we see all these stadiums are so into it. Because there's this personal connection between fans and the team, and there's not enough of that here. It exists. Those people were there on Sunday, but it's not enough of that there, and that's, and this is part of that. How would you rank those? So, like we said, I think it depends on when you're asking the question. Are we asking it 10 years from now?
Right.
Are we asking it today? Are we asking, and who are you asking? But I think 0-7 is historic.
It is historic in the wrong way. And it's a record that will never be broken.
Yeah, probably not.
So, you know, and it is about football. So while the important legacy is the community fund and those kids, we are football writers, and this is a football team.
Yeah.
So in the end, it'll be winningest coach in Bengals history, but.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's just and that
you're right. Every conversation will end with but 0-7.
Yeah,
it'll be did this great thing,
right?
Did this great thing, but 0-7.
And
I just you can't hit the period button until you write 0-7. And I think that's why, to me, that's the ending part of the legacy, because you can't even get to the good stuff without getting the bad thing out of your mouth. I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah.
And does it matter in the big picture? I don't know. Matter. I don't know if, I don't think Marvin cares about what his legacy is here.
No.
I think he is proud of what he's done here.
Right. If they go 13-3 next year, win the Super Bowl, he'll care. He'll be like, I left all those players.
I set the foundation.
And Marvin will be appreciated and loved.
Yes. So that's that. Let's, we have to do our Jolly Plumbing Player of the Week.
Yeah.
So the jack of all trades player of the week, honest day's work, working hard, doesn't want any of the accolades. Our three, Alex Redmond, Christian Westerman, the two guard combo that came in. And then again, it's like our annual right of putting William Jackson the third in here, because you never notice him, because no one ever throws at him.
He
just breaks up passes when they try to.
Right.
So who do you got?
You know, he's been a punching bag for 2 years, and deservedly so. But I'll give it to Christian Westerman. I mean, Alex Redmond turned in the best performance, according to Pro Football Focus, of any Bengals offensive player.
Or any Detroit offensive player.
But Alex has played this year, so we've given him some love. We haven't written a story about him. He's been heard on this podcast. So Christian Westerman, in his second active game ever, first playing time ever, didn't get Andy killed. And Gio ran for some yards, so I'm going to go with that guy.
Played pretty well, yeah. I'll go with Alex Redmond. I'll go with Alex Redmond with the PFF grade as the high.
I mean,
you know, he's out there. He's bringing a lot of energy. This team that needed some energy, needed some spunk, needed a little bit of that.
He didn't get a flag?
He did not get flagged. I didn't see him in any fights.
No.
I'm sure he was somewhere on the bottom of a pile or something, but I didn't see him in any fights. So good for Alex Redmond.
Yeah.
Former undrafted free agent who came in and maybe at least at the very least made the Bengals a little more comfortable with their depth at guard going forward.
Yes.
Do they still need to address a lot of offensive line positions? They sure do. But maybe you're a little more comfortable with your four guards, and maybe you'll add one, I don't know. But maybe you feel comfortable with Clint Bowling, Trey Hopkins, Westerman, and Redmond now. Going forward next year.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's Jolly Plumbing. Remember, Jolly Plumbing is an honest choice for all your plumbing needs. You can go to jollyplumbing.com and cast your vote for who you think should be our Jack of All Trades Player of the Week. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we talk about this being Marvin's last game on Sunday against the Ravens. This isn't like the last 2 years where you can see all the free agents on the horizon and they're big names.
Yeah.
It's not like that this
year.
But who are we possibly seeing their last game in stripes on Sunday? Who do you have near the top of the list? We'll just say start with starters.
Starters? That's a good question. I'm running through the list, Paul, and I don't think, I mean, that's, I guess, the good and bad part of this season is a lot of these guys will be back next year.
Yeah.
Some guys that we need to talk about are on injured reserve. So I think number one is going to be the center, Russell Bodine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Bengals fans can't wait for that to happen. I think that will happen. The club did not enter extension talks at all in the offseason. Look, Russell Bodine's going to go down as one of the better members of his draft class, which is a whole other topic of conversation. But, you know, look, guy walked in as a starter, started for four straight years.
Yeah.
Maligned. You needed a minimum salary guy when at the time you were paying tackles and guards big money. But I think that time has come. So I think, wear your 61 jersey at home.
Yeah.
In the bar.
Yeah.
And,
how many of those have been sold?
I think that's the big one, probably.
Yeah. Of the starters, yeah, you're probably right with that one. Let's dive into the IR guys. That's where the interesting conversations happen. So to me, the most interesting personnel decision of the offseason is Adam Jones's team option.
Right.
Right? Because you've got it's up to the club.
Yeah.
The club can make the call of whether they want to do it or not.
Right.
So what are they going to do?
Yeah, and I think the emergence of William Jackson III, and, you know, they picked up the fifth-year option on Darquez. So, you know, I think it's one of those where it makes sense. Adam played through a broken back, ends the year on IR with a I forget what he went on IR with, to be honest. Because he was playing through
Adam
the broken
Jones
back. Yeah.
With the groin.
The groin, that's right.
On the pick against Pittsburgh.
See, that's the thing. Like he's been banged up this year. Like I think football caught up to his mid-30s self.
A little bit, yeah.
So I think it's one of those where I think it's in the best interest of all parties to not pick up the option.
Yeah.
And then if you think he can come back and be like, hey, Adam, are you willing to be our fourth corner punt returner at a much reduced rate?
Yeah.
I think Adam would like the opportunity to maybe cash in and see if there's another contract to play.
I'd be curious what he would get when you look at his history.
Right.
And especially how teams view him. I mean,
yeah,
inside of this
January
building
thing was
inside of this building, they view him much differently
right.
than he's viewed outside of this building.
Right.
So what does that mean? You know what I mean? If he were to become a free agent, how many offers would he really have out there?
Right.
At the very least, I think the Bengals could be like, look, we'll talk to you, but we're not going to extend this contract, but we'll talk to you about a new one
right.
that looks different because, you know, all the injuries you've been through,
right.
and we'll see what the market says
right.
for you.
And that, the new head coach might have something to say about that, too, new DC.
The new head coach, to me, might have a lot to say about a few different guys.
Right.
Let's talk about Tyler Eifert.
Yeah.
That seems to be a... I am really curious what his market's going to be. Because to me, the injury history, I mean, it's got to be a one-year prove it
you would
somewhere.
Think so.
But how much is that even going to be worth? I mean, you could be getting an all-pro type of
right.
tight end.
Right.
Or you'd be get a guy that gives you like right. 28 snaps and then he breaks.
I think he's gone because I could see a team with a 1 year with so many incentives that make it crazy, that could make it crazy mm-hmm. money. And the Bengals don't do incentive deals. Like, they'll add a little bit here or there if you're a Pro Bowl or if you're like, but they don't
really.
I think
they'd be willing to do an incentive deal with Tyler, knowing what
mold.
He can be here, his relationship with his chemistry with Andy. Break the mold.
They like, would. I mean, that would be something they don't. I mean, they literally, at least in my brief time of looking their contracts, since
they sort of have done it. I mean, the perfect deal is
those are
game based.
Yeah.
They're game
they're
based.
They're game based.
So, but that's what to me wouldn't. Isn't that what Tyler's would be? Game based.
Then you're talking about a huge. Yeah. I mean, put it this way. I think Tyler would come back to that if he had nothing else, and I do think with the cap going up another $10 million,
mm-hmm.
with the fact that all the other tight ends always seem to get hurt too, that I think he's just going to find bigger dollars elsewhere.
Yeah. I'm curious to see.
Yeah.
Just because of his injury history, he's a really interesting case. where I just, you know, it's a chance. But if teams are willing to take a chance on 1 year deals, there's a couple of guys on here that I think the writing is on the wall. Jeremy Hill.
Yeah.
I think it's over.
Yeah. That was clear on draft day.
Clear on draft day, and even clearer on the day that Marv threw him under the bus for opting for surgery when he didn't need it and basically quitting on the team. Who else on this list? Who else will be a free agent here?
I mean, Eric Winston's again. Yeah, you know what I mean?
He was already been cut
once. He
could
be back. Pat Sims, same kind of thing. I think Pat's time has come.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, it's a list of like 10 guys. Andre Smith is interesting. I think Andre... to me, Paul, will be one of their top priorities. And I think he gets a 2-year deal.
I mean, I think that they would bring him back as a backup. The idea that he will be a backup or they will draft a right tackle.
Yes.
Or draft a tackle.
Yeah.
And put him in there and give him time to develop. If it's needed, you have Andre in case.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the line market is so weird that maybe someone looks at his film at right tackle and gives him starter money again elsewhere. But I think if you're the Bengals and you're, again, rolling in with Sed and Jake right now, and you're thinking of drafting a tackle in the first round or second round, you have to have somebody.
Yeah.
So to me, I think them signing Andre Smith – is a priority.
Yeah.
Because he clearly proved he can swing both sides, back up both sides, potentially start on one side.
Yep.
I think that's the big one to me, Paul, for them.
Yep.
In terms of current free agents.
Yep. One final time, AJ McCarron.
Yeah.
Because we have to constantly be updating this.
This is also fascinating because no one knows what he is yet.
We don't know if he's an RFA yet. We will know soon-ish. I mean,
by March.
It has to be because that's what's going to decide what kind of free agent he is.
Put it this way. The NFLPA believes it has to be, but even they're like, it may not be.
But that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
He's currently an RFA.
Yes, he is currently an RFA.
He's currently restricted. The Bengals will place a tender on him until they hear otherwise. And so we will see. But teams can try to sign him.
Yes.
It's just a matter of if the Bengals will be able to be compensated or not for that.
Right. And there's a couple.
Besides like a comp pick.
Right. Couple important details. If you're an RFA, so we'll just use the Browns. If the Browns sign AJ McCarron and the Bengals put a second round tender on him, that means that is the number 33 pick.
Yes.
Any free agent RFA tender, it is that team's original pick.
Yes.
So the Browns, it can't be number 50 or 60 or whatever else they got for Turkey Bowl.
Perhaps a deal would be arranged later a trade would
happen.
That
is also part of it. Unlike the NHL, RFAs in the NFL can be traded. So the Bengals could match whatever offer and keep him here and then trade him. So that is also within the rules. So as long as he's an RFA, there are arms and things that can be done, but those are two important details.
If he's a UFA, he's definitely gone. He's going to go somewhere where he can at least compete for a position.
And he will likely be a third round comp pick.
Third round comp pick. Because quarterback money is so much bigger than every other position. Even a backup quarterback makes more than a receiver would normally get in free agency. So you're looking at a third or a second.
Right.
Is probably what the difference is at this point.
Right.
But I think even as an RFA, I think someone will be willing to pay him.
I think so.
And
there are so many teams with so many picks that it's just hard to
roster all those.
The
Browns make a lot of sense, especially if Hugh's still up there, that they do still pull the trigger and end up with AJ McCarron and Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or whoever they decide to take. To me, that's a likely scenario for that. All right. We're going to get much more into that once the season ends. We'll dive more into free agents and personnel, who it's going to be. But the bottom line is, like so many things, so much of it depends on who is the head coach here next year.
Yes. Will that head coach be posting their jobs in a short amount of time?
Potentially.
Like open roster spots?
Potentially.
Maybe these owners.
I think so.
They're probably going to
use ZipRecruiter.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. Why not? Why wouldn't you? Because if you need great talent for your business and it's short on time, you need to go to ZipRecruiter.com.
You get all the best candidates.
Because you don't want to lose any of those important resumes in a huge stack to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools, ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, you know the quality hires keep your business moving forward, but you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job. So avoid all that. So with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. So right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/beat. That's ZipRecruiter.com/beat. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/beat.
All right, it means it's time for power rankings. We promised it. And so we're going to do power rankings of Rocky movies. So we ground rules here, 1 through 5.
Yeah.
Creed. Oh. Creed. I'm counting Creed.
Yeah. Okay.
This most one of the most, the
okay.
most recent.
Well, the Rocky Balboa. So there's 7 then.
7. Yeah. And the Rocky Balboa. Okay. So I've got, let's just go 1 through 7. Do you want to count down? Are we feeling positive? It's Christmas season. So let's be positive at the end. Let's start. Let's count down. Start with the worst. So do you have your 1 through 7 in your head?
From 7.
Or do you just want to do the top 2, bottom 2?
I think we got to do top 2, bottom 2.
Okay, top 2, bottom 2. You're right. The middle all kind of blends together. All right. Give me your number. Give me your 1 and 2.
Well, I'll start at the bottom because I think these are easy.
You're starting at the bottom.
Yeah. So bottom, the worst is Rocky 5.
Yeah. There's no debate.
There's no debate.
There's no debate. Tommy Gunn.
Street fighting.
What was happening there?
It was bad.
Just a complete fail.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone should have stood up in the middle of that film and just been like, look, I'm sorry.
Well, he did that later with Rocky Balboa.
We can't end like that.
No.
We can't end. It was, I mean, just a ruination of a franchise. Yeah.
So also bottom, so number 2 from the bottom to me, Rocky 3.
Three.
Mr. T. Yeah.
Yeah. What's happened to Mr. T since doesn't help. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like if
he's
Mr.
Still
T
alive,
became
though.
A. It, he is very
okay,
much alive,
sure.
Correct, I think.
Yeah.
But if he would have really become. Now he's sort of cult classic, but if he was like a truly huge star, now people would look back at it, I think, a little bit differently.
Right.
But, you know, they also, you know, you can't be banking on the career of Mr. T. You got to know that's probably going to be short lived.
Yeah.
And it was like, what's happened? Why is Mr. T fighting?
Yeah, and it flipped. Now, from being from Chicago, I liked seeing a Chicago like character, I guess, like a bad dude from Chicago. Mm-hmm. But like, it just while they all of those Rocky movies are formulaic, that one was just so like expected and cliche. I don't, you know what I mean? It just didn't.
Yeah.
It looked the same as Rocky. The first one, mm-hmm. flipping roles with Apollo, and he's the Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan mix.
Luscious Lips. What was his name?
Thunder Lips. Not Luscious Lips.
Whatever. You know?
Yeah. Hogan like, and Mr. T aren't carrying you
to
that Emmy. I would kind of put Balboa as my bottom.
Wow.
Maybe. I felt like it was trying to hang on too much. See, now, and I felt like they knew they had to come back and do Creed because they knew that Balboa wasn't as good in closing it down. I'm not a huge.
So you didn't like, you thought the two ways that Sly tried to end that didn't work.
See, you'll see, I like Creed a lot. And I thought Rocky Balboa, it felt forced and I don't like old man thing.
So you're saying Rocky as a boxer should have ended in Russia?
Absolutely. Well, okay. Yes.
Because
yes.
you're saying
because
Rocky 5 was the worst and Balboa is second worst. So
yes.
Rocky as a boxer should have ended in Russia.
Should have ended in Russia. Okay. It was his shining moment.
Yeah.
Go out on top.
Right.
You know?
If you can change, I can change. We all can change.
We all can change.
Right.
Everyone can change.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's my opinion, and that's why it's my number one. But
Creed's number one?
No.
Oh,
Rocky 4 is number one. Come on. I think there's such a clear high and low in the series.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, 4 is so clearly better than all the rest.
Yeah.
I know there's lots of people who love 1. because of the original factor to that. And I give you that. But four was just is so epic. There's so many great things about it. I know Drago is a legendary character in cinema history. Yeah. So I
agree with you. And number two for me is Rocky One, the original Rocky.
Yeah, yeah. I have Creed, but I have they're very close. Like Creed and Rocky One to me, because I loved Creed. I thought it was really well done.
See, we disagree on Creed because I see that as a spinoff, as a new branch.
Yeah.
While Rocky's in it, it's not a Rocky movie. It's a Creed movie. So to me, that's why I think there's a. Now we can all argue about that. It's like Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know what I mean? So I'm gonna
my
go.
Point is, I think it was almost more difficult to create Creed and put a nice bow around the entire series because it seemed so out of the bag.
Right.
To actually pull it back, it was almost more impressive than number one was. But one is obviously, it's legend, you know.
Yeah.
The first Rocky's incredible. You know, no one's debating that. But I kind of thought it was really challenging to do Creed, and I liked it. So that's it.
Yeah,
round it up. Not the most passionate. I think it was too obvious. I think the top and bottom being so obvious take a little bit of the debate out of it. I don't know. Maybe people disagree.
Yeah.
Get at us on Twitter. Let us know if you disagree with our thoughts on how obvious it is.
Carl Weathers still alive for all we know.
Yeah, I bet he's
at Mr. T.
He probably doesn't like the one he dies though. He probably like man when I die wasn't the best.
No.
Although he was great in that dead scene, he did a good job, like you know, being just dead. Like shaking on the canvas.
Yeah,
I thought it was good. Throw the damn towel.
Yeah.
All right. Why are you mad?
You know, Paul, I'm gonna go a little off the board here just because it's the new year. It's the end of the. I'm not mad this week.
Oh, how about that? Merry Christmas.
Because here's the thing: I could have been mad at a 2-hour delay on Christmas Eve evening. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't be mad because I still got there early enough to get on that delayed flight where it actually got me home.
Earlier.
Like 4 hours earlier.
How about that?
So while everyone else around me was mad for sitting on a plane for 2 hours,
I'm like,
this is cool. Like,
great delay, guys.
I can't be mad about that.
Great delay, guys.
Like, I roll in and like, you know, got out of Chicago early and out, got in here with no delay. Like, everything came out my house this week.
Boom.
I had coffee.
Man, you know that the Christmas season was strong this year when you're not even mad about it.
No.
That's incredible.
I was racking my brain that I, like, honestly, this period of time between our last BBP and this one, this week.
Yeah.
I am shocked.
Turning over a new leaf.
Well, no.
It kind of makes me want to be mad about something for you, but I don't have anything either. I just came off of baby's first Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, my. You want to be filled like it's just a whole different way to experience Christmas. Like the first time that she was able to grab and like actually rip open a gift, it was like she just won the Super Bowl. I thought it was the greatest thing I've ever seen. So baby's first Christmas is an unstoppable force this time of year. That is, you know, I'm just like, man, I can't wait till Christmas next year. This is gonna be
all right. Well, I'll give the people one thing because they might think I'm copping out a little bit. And,
I am.
I was irritated,
but not
by
mad.
People who don't think Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
That irritated me.
I don't want to go into this debate.
It didn't make me mad.
You're just
because I was watching Die Hard on Christmas Eve, and therefore I was happy.
Yeah,
but that it irritated me. So I'll give you all that, and we can fight on Twitter box. I will fight you because now it's over, and it
now
could
it's
make
time.
Me mad. Yeah,
that you start. You want to make sure you start 2018 by being mad about
exactly.
something, so we'll be prepared for that. That's going to be next week. No BBT2 this week because our whole schedule's all thrown off because of Christmas pushing us back. So just the one podcast this week, and then we'll obviously be back with the season wrap next week and all. There's going to be obviously lots to talk about from whatever's about to go down, how this is all going to be finally handled here on Sunday night, Monday, whatever. So we'll have the BBP for you after that all goes down next week in case it, you never know, in case it runs over or something like that. So check back then. BTS, season finale of BTS tonight, Wednesday night at Holy Grail Banks. Clayton Fedulum is our guest. We will wrap the year and, you know, it's been fun. Thanks to everybody that came down to Holy Grail Banks this year. It's been a really good time down there. So, anyway, thanks everybody for listening.
And, thank you.
We'll talk to you next week on the BBP.